Boker Tov, world. How are things up in the Galil, Ori? Quiet? Yes, sweetie. Today's daf in Masechet Menachot, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKedesh, is daf Samach Vov. And we got up to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So let's remember, we're going to go over everything anyway today, so it's not all that important for us to up front make sure we remember. But we went through two brises, right? And in each one of these, we had various pshatim of how is it that we can be, at least tell the baitusim, we know ourselves that, of course, the halacha is what Nimochas HaShabbos means and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was referring to when he spoke to Moshe and as Moshe gave it over to us. That was never an issue. The question is, what about the michlol, the overall sense of how it is that all of the psukim add up in this direction? Everyone had another insight. And so the last insight that was new is a brand new approach today by Reb Shimon ben Elazar. Listen to what he says. Ketuv echad omer, this is brilliant. This is like, whoa. Okay. Ketuv echad omer, sheishet yamim tochal matzo. Now remember that one pasuk says, 6 days, eat matzos for 6 days. Now we know the other pasuk says, of course, as we go out of Mitzrayim, shivat yamim matzo tochel. So which one is it? Is it 6 days or is it 7 days? Okay, so I'll explain it very simply. The matzah that you cannot eat for 7 days. What's that matzah? That matzah is the new matzah. Because you can't eat that matzah until after you brought the omer. Because the new matzah is not going to be mutter until the second day of Yontev. So for the first day of Yontev, you had 7 days to eat that kind of matzah. But that's the old matzah. The new matzah you only have for 6 days. Isn't that great? Anyway, gorgeous shot. So, and that's what it must mean. Matzah she'iata yachola ochla shiv'a, namely, minachadash, ata yachola ochla shisha, at least, minachadash, because that will be mimochrat ha-shabbat. So that proves to you what the mimochrat ha-shabbat is referring to bichlal. So now it's quite clear. Beautiful. Now, let's take a look at the pasuk b'chol. Miyom aviyachem es omer hatnufa. There seems to be unclear what thing comes first and what it is that we need to do before we do the next thing. So let's say the Seder HaDvarim over here. Miyom aviyachem tisperu. Sounds like that you should bring basically the same yiktzar viyavi, do the whole thing on the second day of Pesach, yes. And from that day on, you have an opportunity. Your opportunity is to be Tisperu Chamishim Yom. Whenever you get around to it, you know, as long as you already brought the Omer at the correct time, now you can decide, okay, let's see. A nice time to have Shavuos would be to start our 50 days in 2 weeks. That brings us to the next good weather report for Shavuos. Great. We'll wait 2 weeks and we'll start counting. So, Oh, no. Talmud Lomar, that's why we have in the other pasuk. You have to start counting at the first moment that you put that sickle to your standing kamah, to your standing grain. So that means that the pasuk itself is telling me that we've got two different inyanim over here. So then what exactly, why did it say, if I know it's me'achel charmesh b'kamah, that's when you have to start doing your counting. So then I might have thought that you should be kotzer v'yispar. You should now start counting after the ktsira, but you don't have to bring it yet. And then you can bring your carbon when it's ready to be brought. And then whatever, okay, get around to it a couple of days later, that would be fine. Talmud Lomar, Miyom Aviyachem. No, that's the point. So we have basically two completely different Nekudas. One is Miyachel Charmish, and one is Miyom Aviyachem. So on the other hand, well, if it says Miyom Aviyachem, so then that would mean that Yochol, Yiksar, Yispar, Viyavi, Biyom, Mashmenet, you do it all in the day. So you do the Ketsira, Ochel Chamesh Bakama, and you do the Sefira, and you do the Hava, all starting in the daytime. But that would mean that you cannot start the Sefira Sa'omer the night before. Talmud Lomar, no. Actually, it says, Beferish Sheva Shabbatot Mimoti Yena. They have to be complete wakes. Now, how could you get a complete week if you only start in the middle of the day? The day begins the night before. If you're going to wait till daylight, you can't get Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot. Therefore, it must be that if we're talking about Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot, it must be that you started counting from the night before, Bizman Shata Matchil Limanot Ba'aret. Okay, so now we know that we do the Svira Sa'omer, and we know that we do the Ktsira, Me'achel Chamesh Bakama, we do from the night before. So if that's the case, then maybe we should actually bring the Omer the night before. Maybe this is a special halacha that the Torah is saying you have to do all of this Aveda starting from the night before so that you should have Sheva Shabtot Mimot. So Yochol Yiktzor, and actually Yavi to the Beis HaMikdash, you should do everything in the nighttime. Talmud Lomar Miyom Aviyachem. So how are we going to balance the different inyanim in this passage? Huh? So it works out very well. Okay, it's that the Ketsira and the Spiras, that's Miyachel Chamesh Bakama, Tisperu Chamishim Yom, Sheva Shabbatot Mimot, that's the Svira. And that starts from the night before, and that means that the Ketsira had to be the night before, because that was Achel Chamesh Bakama. Masha Inkein, the Hava, Miyom Aviyachem, is in the day. So now I understand the Seder Hadvarim. Okay, now I have all my Pesukim right. Now, let's go back and review the different ways of understanding the contradictions in the Pesukim that allow us to be persuasive in our arguments with the Baidusim to show that the Torah as a whole is clearly taking for granted that Shavuos is 50 days from the day after Yom Tov Rishon Shel Pesach. So, basically, let's go through each one of these and see whether they're really persuasive. So Rava likes to do this. Of course, we've seen him do this before. Kulu Islu Pircha. Remember that from Purim. Every one of these things can be shown to be not absolutely persuasive, except for the last two. So here, basically, I'm going to go through with you, says Rava, every single one of the proofs in the Braita, except they're all no good, in the sense of not being absolutely persuasive, except for the last two Tanoi, both of the first Braita and of the second Braita. The Tratarte Tanoi Batroi, Bein Bematnita Kamaita, Bein Bematnita Batraita. So let's go first through the different Tanoi of the first Braita. Okay, the first Braita was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, if you recall, had pointed out that if one pasuk says to count days, and one pasuk says to count complete weeks, so then there must be a difference of when Pesach came out. If Pesach came out on a Shabbos, and then you're starting to count from a Sunday, then you get seven complete weeks, because the week would begin on immediately Mitzvah Shabbos. So there the Torah says Sheva Shabbatot. Masha Inkein, if you started counting in the middle of the week, and when would that be? When Pesach did not come out on Shabbos? So then it's 50 days, whatever day of the week it is. That's a very nice proof, but it's not persuasive, because maybe the contradiction between the Chamishim Yom and the Sheva Shabbatot is not a contradiction. And maybe it's coming to tell me Abaya's Chiddush, which is very nogea l'halacha, because Abaya said, we see from here that there's two different mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah l'mimnei yumi, and there's a mitzvah l'mimnei shavui. So you're supposed to count both the weeks and the days. So if that's the case, now, of course, if those are two completely different mitzvahs, now this would be nogea, let's say somebody missed the counting of one of the days of the Omer, right? Can he still count the next week So in other words, let's say he missed day five. All right, so now he's not supposed to make a bracha because he doesn't have the full 50 yom. But when he gets to Shiva Yamim, where he could say Shavua Echad, that's a different mitzvah. So over there, he would be able to make his bracha on the counting of the week. So at every week, Shnei Shavua, Shalosh, each one of them, he would be able to make the bracha if it's two completely different mitzvahs. How exactly do we add it up and how exactly are we mekayin it? That's a big machlokas. We know what we do. I mean, basically, what we do is we do both. That became the minhag, but that's certainly not the way that everybody understands it. There's different ways to, that maybe you do the mentioning of the week only at the week, and the other times you mention only the days, and so on. But okay, we know our minhag is we put together all of the counting, and we do both at all times. So that doesn't prove that there's two different periods. One that's a year where Pesach comes out on Shabbos, and one that is a year when it's during the week. So there goes that proof. That's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now let's take a look at the next two, actually. We have Rabbi Eliezer, and we have Rabbi Yoshua. So they said that, look, you know, you have to be able to have something that is nicker, and that is exactly when you start, because otherwise, why does it say Tisparloch? Why does it say that it's dependent on Besdin? If it's starting on a Shabbos, then it wouldn't have anything to do with Besdin. So Rabbi Eliezer said, that means that it's Kavua al pi the month. So then that means it's not Halach and Mokros and Shabbos. Rabbi Yoshua basically said the same thing. He said that you need to have something that you could see that is clearly identifiable by a person. This is when it is that I would have to count. And that would mean that we have the same thing that we have on Shavuos, we have on Pesach. So that would mean that you have to start from after Yontav, the first day of Pesach. But is it really the first day of Pesach? All it says is that it's immediately identifiable in terms of the day that Besdin was Kaveya. Couldn't that be the last day of Pesach? So the Baitusim could be able to argue back to us, okay, fine. So it has to be on Mitzvah Yonta. But the same way you told us, how do you know which Shabbos? I say to you, how do you know which Yonta? Maybe it means start on the last day of Pesach. So that can't really be the fundamental place where the Torah would be telling you that. Okay, so that would be essentially the arguments in the first Braita. The only thing that actually is 100% clear is Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. So they find that it has to be at the beginning because they're comparing the end to the beginning. So they were saying that, look, in the same way that we've got the Shavuos ending of this, which is a Yontav, and it's the beginning of a Yontav, despite the fact that there's the Tashlumi of Shavuos, the same thing has to be at the beginning. Both of them basically access the issue of beginnings. And therefore, there's no answer to that. And that is a very good raya. Now let's take a look at the next prize, says Rava. I'll go on to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda was the one who said that, look, it says 50 yom, and that means that it's the same count every year. The reason that the Torah is Kaveya 50 yom is because you're going to have the same number of days in your count no matter what the year is. So if the first year was this way, then all of the years should be counted in that period between Pesach and Shavuot should have the same number of days. But, I mean, that's not necessarily true. Because I could have said, look, I mean, all it says is 50 days. So it might be that you do have a window of 6 days of Yontem in which to begin those 50 days. You know, so sometimes it'll start from the day one, and sometimes it'll day three, and sometimes day six. Could also be the last day of Yontem. So therefore, maybe when it says 50 yom, it's just referring to the time in which you start counting. So Dilma 50 besides the extra elastic period of 6 days, which varies in the year, count 50 days. I mean, I don't see how you could disprove that. Now let's go on to the next one. So after that, in the second Braita, we had Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira basically said the same thing that Rabbi Eliezer said, and as I said before, it doesn't prove that it's Yontav Rishon. It proves that it's Yontav, yes, but it doesn't prove that it's Yontav Rishon. Maybe it's Yontav Acharon. And Rabbi Yossi Nami, look, let me tell you something. Rabbi Yossi must have realized himself that he's got a problem. Because remember, he said, or I can tell you. So why did he say, or I can tell you? Because he realized that his first argument wasn't persuasive. His first argument was that how could Shabbos mean Shabbos Bereishis? It's got to mean Yontav, because otherwise go and pick a Shabbos at random. But what if Shabbos means Yontav? It could still mean the second day Yontav. That's why he must have realized that himself, says Rava, and that's why he basically said the same thing as Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira had said in the first Braita. And therefore, it's basically, I'm able to go ahead and to show you the same way that I said about Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira, I could say about Rabbi Yossi's second proof. But the last, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that must be why he said the ode, by the way, right? And Rabbi Yossi Nami Chosu Beipircha, he saw that he's got a problem. And that's why he said the ode, and also, I can tell you, but that's not so good either. Masha Inkain, when it comes to the last, okay, that's, as I said, I don't have any kind of answer to that. Now, we mentioned, by the way, while you were actually talking, you said something that I'd like to understand further. You said that according to Abaye, the reason that we have one pasuk that says Sheva Shabtot Bimot, and the other bright that says Chavishim Yom, is because there's really two mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah Lemimne Yumi, and there's a mitzvah Lemimne Shavui. So basically, again, you might actually say every day, just a day, until you get to the Shavui. So that would be a yom, like we do for the first week. And then when we get to 7 days, it would be, today is 7 days, which is 1 week. And then when it gets to 8 days, we just mention 8 days. And then we get to 14 days, we say today is 14 days, which are 2 weeks. But not that there's a mitzvah on every single day to mention what week it is. So that is a very chashuv shita between the Rishonim. The Baal HaMor holds that that's what to do. And that way you'd be yotze both chiyuvim. But it doesn't mean that every single day there's a mitzvah to actually mention the week. Others learn that the mitzvah is to say the number of the day of that week. So today is the second day of the fourth week, and so on. But as far as saying the totality of the days, then we don't do that. So that they would say, let's say, on day 8, today is 1 week and 1 day. On day 9, today is 1 week and 2 days, and so on. Which also is different from our minhag, and it would not mention every single day the total number of days. That's the sheet of the Mordechai, among other Rishonim. And then we have our minhag, which is really a combination. It became our minhag, is to do both, to be mimne yume totality. So we say the total number of days, and we say the number of weeks, and the number of days extra in that week. Shmona shavuot, shnei shavuot, v'shnei yamim, we would say, let's say, right? Separately from the total number of days. Okay, great. So that's what he said. Now, the question, halakha l'maisa, the Rabbanan that we're learning by Ravashi, they actually did both. They were manu yumi, and they were manu shavue. Now, as Rabbanan understands, this is one of my most difficult gemaras, because it has both Abaya and Ravashi, which is enough to completely short-circuit my brain. And so it's a favorite Gemara, anyway. Whereas,
that would be possible.
Whereas Amemar was money yumi, but Amemar didn't go, He didn't go into this thing about counting weeks. He said, all of these frummies, come on, the whole thing is only a Zecher L'Migdash. And yeah, what are you being so machmer about? It's not as if it's a mitzvah b'zman hazeh. It's a derabbanan, it's a Zecher L'Migdash. It's not even the Mamash Achiyah. And therefore, why should I be so machmer? Now, L'maisa, the Rambam doesn't paskin like Amemar. And he says that the mitzvah is b'zman hazeh d'oraisa. In all times, it's not connected dafka to the Havas Omer, it's connected to the Yom HaViyachem et HaOmer. And therefore, we are able to move on this exciting night after Richie had such a restful night and is in full command of his incredible powers of Chazomus, an inheritance from a famous Chazon, a grandfather, and generations, perhaps, of Chazonis. Hold on, everybody, because it's been a restful night for Rich. Give it to us, Rich.
Restful night. Night. The sky full of falling projectiles. Restful night. In Jerusalem, actually, we got away easy, but Rachmanis the people in Israel. And up north, of course.
Yeah, what happened with you up north last night, Mr. Gavi? I'm not getting a full report from Ori this morning.
We had one or two. There was a lot.
Okay, but all right, that's nice. At least you didn't have to get up a lot in the middle of the night. Okay. Oh, you're starting on the wrong octave. Let's try that again. Does anyone have a tire inflator pump? You know what the kind said you could.
Okay. Rejuvenation potion would probably do better. But anyway.
All right. Kitzarua und Tanur Bekupot. So we got up to the exciting presentation, you know, in which everybody has to answer three times to the question, you know, what would you say? Should I do it? Go for it, go for it, go for it. Anyway, so they got to the point where they actually completed the Ketzira, and then Nitanua Bekupot, they put it into those very kupot that they said, kupazo, 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 and then they would bring it to the Azora. Now, what happened then? So now we have a very interesting machlokas, because according to Rabbi Meir, the understanding of Kali, the mitzvah of Kali means that it's supposed to be toasted. Now, how do you toast barley? Of course, you could start with the Quaker Oats idea, shot from guns. But that wasn't the approach that they took in the Beis HaMikdash. So according to Rabbi Meir, the way to do Kali, he understands the word Kali as mean, no, I got no time for air raids now. Hopefully we won't be, shush. So hopefully we won't be bothered. And anyway, so according to Rabbi Meir, Kali means directly exposed to the fire. How do you directly expose to a fire? Well, you'd obviously have to hold it by the straw and then just pass it over flames. So that means that you would not be able to do your standard way of doing first. Obviously, you would do the disha, and then you would be zaira, and you have the actual grains. Then you'd process the grains. But since over here it has to be koli, you can't do it that way. So according to Rabbi Meir, we didn't do any disha, and we were mahavavim oto ba'ur, we put it directly into a fire. Just for a moment, pass it through till you get it a little bit roasted, you know. And that way you'd be Makayim, the mitzvah's Kali. So says Rabbi Meir. Whereas the Chachomim say, no, that's not the understanding of Kali. Kali can be through, as we know, the way that we actually did it. We took this nice, shiny, and I say specifically shiny, as we're going to see soon, this nice, shiny avuv. So we had a cylinder with holes in it. And that we would roll over the fire, and that way the fire would come through the holes and so on, but the grains themselves would be inside of that copper cylinder. And therefore, say the Chachamim that actually, bekanim ubekolachot choftim oto, you do disha, but you don't do a normal disha, because remember, normal disha would actually be very rough on the grain. As we were talking about grain of chita that's been dried out there for a long time. But you can't do that to the karmel, remember the soft grains of the omer. So if you would run one of those mitah shel turbin over it, it would destroy it. So what exactly did you do? You did a very light kind of disha. So you would use reeds and the stems of soft twigs to beat on it, and that would take out the hard coverings of the grains, and that would be the equivalent, essentially, of a normal disha. So you would then have your actual pieces of barley that would not be on the straw. That way, kadesh lo yitma'ech, you wouldn't crush the barley. So then you had your pure barley and put it into an abub. So you put it into this copper cylinder. Va'abub haya menukav, and there was like little holes in it that allowed the fire to penetrate, not totally to burn it, but to get it really nice and toasted. But it was toasty. And kadesh ya'ur sholeit bekulo, and that way everything inside would be properly toasted. After you did essentially a disha, so you did thresh it, not normally, but you threshed it enough to get your actual grain, then it was toasted, and they would spread it out on the floor of the azorah, because that would be the equivalent of the zoreh. The zoreh is the winnowing, where the wind takes away the pieces that are not wanted. And that's what they would do. They would spread it out, v'aruach min hashevet bo, and then the wind would blow over it, which would get rid of any of the inedible parts. Then they would take it and put it in a rechayim shel girusot. So remember, since the Torah said geres karmel, now geres karmel means gross caramel, meaning that it's not supposed to be crushed into flour the way you normally would, but you put it through the type of grinding mill that you would use for things that aren't meant to be very thin like flour, and that would be like a bean mill, a rechayim shel grusot, and out of that, you would get an isaron, a fine flour. You put it through 13 different sieves. That way you would be mekayim the geres, and that would give you essentially the flour that you need for your kor. What about the rest of it that wasn't going to be used? Hashar, the rest of it, your peida, because it was owned by Hekdesh, and it doesn't have any kind of halacha of giving it to the koranim or anything like that. It's just basically ex kodesh, meaning that it's now padui and anybody can eat it. There's no problem. Now the question is, what about taking off trumas and maaseres and so on? Well, if the person who buys it makes a challah out of it, right? It makes dough out of it. The moment that he makes dough out of it, it becomes chayev and challah. And at that moment, since he is a hedyot, he's not hekdesh, he is, of course, chayev and challah like he would be from any other grain that he made it with. But it would not be chayev in ma'aser. Why wouldn't it be chayev in ma'aser? Because the processing of the grain itself, which included piling it up and the miruach of the grain, all of that was done while it was in the rishus of Hegdash. Well, miruach Hegdash is not mechayev you in trumas and maaseres. So because of that, the challah, which you became chayev in only after you made it into a dough, you'd have to take. But the trumas and maaseres, that you would not have to take. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, you're chayiv in everything, both in challah and even in maaseres. And we're going to have to understand Rabbi Akiva Shita, because Bepashas, Miruach Hegdesh, patters you from taking off maaser afterwards. So let's go take a look at the psukim that these machlokas revolve around. Tana Rabbana. So what it says in the pasuk is it calls the challah, the aviv. So, kim takriv minchat bikurim la'ashem, aviv kolui ba'esh geres karmel. Okay, so we've got like all of these different things we have to be mekayim. So what does aviv mean? Aviv means aviv. Namely, in this case, it means literally aviv. That is to say that it should be the first things, the av, the beginning of the harvest, early harvest. Kolui ba'esh, This means literally, you had to actually wave it by holding onto the stalk, and you waved it over an open fire, and that's the meaning of Koli, says Rabbi Meir. Whereas the Chachamim say, not true. Ur is not Koli. Toasting is not open fire. Toasting is toast. There's got to be something between the toast and the fire. Otherwise, it would be called Ur, not Koli. Koli, the meaning of the word Koli, is something that allows toasting without burning. So that would mean that there would have to be an Avuv Shel Koliyot. Or, now, if you take a look in the Shita, this seems to be a Lishna Achrina, which is a different approach to what the reasoning is of the Chachamim Argan Rebbe Meir. Ein Lashon Keli, Koli Eladavar Kalil. Kalil means shiny. And that means that it must have been inside the Avuv, which was made out of copper, which is shiny. We find that word Koli and Kalil used in the second Erechin, Legabe, the different things that were shiny in the Beis HaMikdash. So even sometimes outshining gold, as the Gemara would say, it was so shiny. But in any event, that's the word Kalil, and that means it had to be inside of this really nice-looking Omer popcorn maker, which, of course, the popcorn in this case is not the popular corn, but it's the barley. So that's what it means. Okay, so according to us, what did you do? You brought an Avuv Shel Koliyot. You brought this cylinder, this hollow cylinder. Like people, you know, these guys who go around with their popcorn making machines, you know, and it looks all nice and shiny and everything. Well, that's what you had to do. It was an Avuv Shel Koliyot Hayasham, and Hayam Enukav Kichlara. It was like a sieve, so it had holes for the fire to be able to come through. Kedeshi Teha'ur Sholetet Bekulo. Now, that explains the Aviv, explains the Kolui, but what's the image is Aviv Kolui, and then it also mentions that it has to be Geres. So this is all the way back at the beginning of Vayikra, basically, in our parsha. Ve'im takriv minchat bikurim la'ashim, aviv, kolui ba'esh, geres karmel, takriv et minchat bikurech. So that minchat bikurim is referring to the hakrabas ha'omer. Now, when it says that loshen, it's not quite clear whether we read it aviv kolui ba'esh or Ba'esh Geres Karmel. So I'm not quite sure whether this is supposed to mean that I do the toasting on the Aviv, or it means that I do the toasting on the Geres, which is after I already ground it. So do I do it while it's really raw grain, or do I do it after I've already taken care of the grain and it's now ready you already ground it and now it's ready to be processed. I'm supposed to first go ahead and grind it before making it into the omer. But when it says clearly the word esh between the two, so it can't mean that the geres koloi, if it says be'esh, koloi be'esh geres, so therefore the word be'esh is mafsik between the geres and the koloi. And that means that I understand that the kalui is going back on the aviv kalui and not on the geres kalui. And that's why we said, go toast it and then grind it. Next word is karmel. What is that word exactly, karmel? Well, as we saw before, kar has a sense of soft because it's the word rach backwards. So it's soft. Who said that about himself? The Rex himself. Ani ayom rach u'mashuach melech. Okay, so there's a softness that's there, and it has to be mal. Mal means that you can squish it. And that's like mililot. Mililot means you take grains, you squeeze them between your fingers. So that means it's got to be soft, and it's got to be squishy, And that has to give us a completely different type of processing, obviously, than we would do on the Shtei Alechem. V'cheinu Omer, v'ish ba mi'ba'al shalisha, beautiful understanding of the pasuk. This guy shows up. Now here, Elisha and his Talmidim don't have anything to eat. And this is one of the Maisanisim with Elisha. And this guy comes from Baal Shalisha, and he brings Elisha vayaveh le'isha Elohim lechem bikurim esrim lechem seorim. So he brings 20, and he's bringing this from the first things that they are able to cut, because it's called the bikurim. And it's basically so fresh that it is karmel betziklono. So it's karmel, meaning that it's totally fresh, inside their coverings, which means that they're still in the husk and they haven't been processed. And Elisha says, give this to all my people and let them eat. And he had 100 talmidim, and everybody ate, and they had tons of food, and they were very happy, and it was great, no problem. So that was the nes. But what do these words actually mean? What is this betziklono? It's a sort of strange word. So we're understanding it to be a notrikun, and that is betziklono. Ba, this guy came, tzak, yatzaklonu, oh, he poured out this grain for us, and then le'achalnu, and no, it was naveh, it was great. You want to see the way that we do that type of analysis of words, in which there are words that don't mean a particular thing. They mean an entire experience of things. So the betziklono is an experience, right? Now, if you're going to be talking about making love, I mean, like, how do you make love? So as it says in Mishle, when we're talking about over there, the woman who is seducing this guy, and she's a married woman, so she says, nit alsa ba'ahavim. So what is nit alsa? I mean, it sounds very sexy, but what exactly does it mean? So nit alsa can only be understood also as a whole series of things that are interrelated with an experience. So it means nisa v'nitain. Why don't we sit and have a little drink and talk it over? V'nala, then let's get into bed. Then v'nismach, let's enjoy ourselves. And then nitchata ba'avim, let's carry on, so to speak, with our lovemaking. So put all that into one word. Or another beautiful example. Kinaf renanim ne'elasa. So what here we're talking about the renanim. So, okay, the renanim is actually the way that we refer to it as the bar yuchni in Shas. It's like this mythical bird, you know, lays an egg and the whole earth drowns, you know. So, but in Lamaisa, obviously it has a portion of Pshat renanim. So it's a bird with incredible plumage. Okay, what precisely? There's a lot of birds with incredible plumage. So, you know, might be talking about bird of paradise. Maybe it's talking about just a, what is that? Oh, gosh, now I forgot. A peacock it might be referring to, whatever. But the renanim is just ne'elsa with its knaf. Now, what's that experience? Because we're trying to describe, so strangely, this is Eov who's trying to describe the way in which Vaisaparashas respond. So what is the experience of having beautiful feathers like that? So it's got to be, the experience has to be translated into that word. So ne'elsa means that it's nose, it can carry its beautiful eggs up to its nest. It's ole, gets to the top of the highest trees. And then it's nitchata, it actually settles down. This is the Lashon, as Rashi says, mechatev yored. So we find that Benogea, the Avodah of Yom HaKippurim, the Mechatev Yored. So it's Mechatev, it lowers itself carefully, even though we're talking about a bird that may weigh 100 tons in the Gemara, but it has all of the gentleness of a mother bird to put down its egg. I'll give you another example. When the Malach is basically telling Bilam, you know, there you are, and you're all upset at your poor ass, And he's the only one, she's the only one that knows what's going on, you know. Yorat ha-derech le-negdi. Now, what exactly does that yorat mean over here? I mean, you get a sense of it, but what it's referring to is the experience of the atonot. Yirata. Well, it was essentially, it was overcome by terror. Ra'ata. It saw precisely what it needed to avoid. Natata. And it turned off of the road, and there you are. It saves your life, and you're sitting there beating it like a fool. Anyway, that's one approach to Carmel, Loshen Rach. The Ve'rabi Shmuel Tana, Kar is a pillow. So a Carmel is a pillow that is full of stuffing, which means that if you take a look at one of these grains, it looks like a stuffed pillow, which means that it is very, very ripe. It's swelled now with its ripeness. The husk is the pillow cover that is so tight around it because it's filling up the entire pillow. So that's the stage that we want you to get it at. Okay, now let's get to the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan about whether there's a chiv of ma'asrot or not. So Rabbi Akiva says, you're chayiv both in challah and in taking off ma'aser. Omer of Kahana, well, the only way to understand Rabbi Akiva is to say that Rabbi Akiva apparently holds that miruach of hegdash eino poter. So apparently, our halacha, where we believe that everything goes according to whether at the moment of the miruach, which is the smoothing down of the grain on top, that's the gmar malacha. If it was in the hands of a bar chiyuva at that point, then it would be chayiv. But if it's in the hands of hegdash, the Torah never gave a din of trumas and maisers to hegdash. Well, he apparently doesn't hold that. He holds that even the miruach of hegdash does not patur you from maiser. Masiv Rav Sheshe says, how can you say such a thing? Take a look at this braita. The braita discusses what to do with the leftover isaronot that we had in order to take the omer. So we had three sa'ah, and we got out the one isaron out of three sa'ah. So what did we do with the leftovers? Motar shalosh sa'in halalu, mahayor simbo. Well, you would be poda it, like our Mishnah says, and it could be eaten by anyone. And it was chayev with challah, but it was potter from maaser. And here is Rabbi Akiva saying what he says in our Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva is b'chayev both in challah and in maaser. But the Braita adds a whole conversation between the Chachomim and Rabbi Akiva, and that conversation makes it clear that Rav Kahana is wrong in how he understands Rabbi Akiva. So Omer lo, the Chachomim say to Rabbi Akiva, look, what would be the din if somebody comes along and he's peida? He comes, hegdash owns, forget about the omer. Normal case, guy walks in. Remember, Hegdash has got the Hegdash store in which you can buy psulei hamukdashim, and you can buy extras that were left over that people gave to the Bedekah Bayit, whatever it is. Oh, right, it's a beautiful general store, the Hegdash general store. Okay, you walk into the general store and you speak to the gizbar, and he sells you some grain. Now, that grain was already processed by Hegdash. What's the din about that grain? Obviously, even though it's chayev and challah, it's potter from maaser because of miruach hegdash. So how do you explain your ptur? Now, this is a ridiculous conversation if Rav Kahana is correct. Because Rav Kahana says that's the whole point, that Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that. So what are you telling me? I'll prove it to you from somebody who buys in the hegdash general store. But Rabbi Akiva supposedly, according to Rav Kahana, he holds that if you'd buy in the Hegdash general store, you'd be chayev. So what are they telling him? We'll prove it to you. Obviously, they knew that Rabbi Akiva did not hold like Rav Kahana says he holds. That actually Rabbi Akiva is made, of course, miruach Hegdash paters. But that this is a special case. And therefore, they want to know, why is this any different than buying in the Hegdash general store? V'imita, so if what Rav Kahana said was true, namely, that miruach hegdash doesn't pater. So what are they telling him? And we'll prove it to you. We'll prove it to you from the same case. Hee hee. It's the same case. You can't prove to me with something that I hold as the opposite in that case also. So obviously, Rav Kahana's explanation is not what Rabbi Akiva held, or at least the Chachomim knew very well that it's not what Rabbi Akiva was saying. And furthermore, another Rav Kahana, who was taking up for the honor of the correct pshatim that should be said by we Rav Kahanas, so Rav Kahana bar Tachlifa says to our Rav Kahana, you're absolutely wrong, because Midatanya, Rabbi Akiva, Bechayev, Bechala, Ube Ma'asrot, Lefishalon, Nitnu Ba'asela, Letzorek Lehem. Ha! Rabbi Akiva explains his own logic. What's his logic? When Beis Din buys all of that barley, they make a tanai and they say, we're only interested in buying the barley that ultimately emerges from all of this, and the rest of it we don't want to own in the first place. How could he do that? Because he holds of Brera. Now, since Rabbi Akiva holds of Brera, it's now retroactively clear what were the grains that were going to actually provide for the Omer. Those were the grains that we bought at the time, although we didn't know it. But actually, quantum mechanics knows it. Well, we have a nice trip, a safe trip, sweetheart. And we don't want the rest, which means that it doesn't really, it's not part of the Miruach of Hekdesh. Hekdesh says, we don't own this. Oh, so if you don't own it, it's not Miruach Hekdesh in the first place. That's the logic of Rabbi Akiva. Of course he agrees to the general din that Miruach Hekdesh paters. Hello, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, you want to know what the real deal is? It's exactly what Rabbi Akiva said. Talmud Aruchu Bepifsho Rabbi Akiva. This is not a casual comment. This is a well-known halacha that Rabbi Akiva used to teach, that Beis Din did not buy all of the grain for the Omer. It used Brera to give the mos only for what was actually going to be used. Lo nitnu ma'ot ala letzorech lehem, and therefore it wasn't really a miruach of Hekdesh. Ah, you'll say, if that's the case, why do you have to be paid it? It's not Hekdesh. Ain't a finami, says Tosfos. It's just that people shouldn't say that Hekdesh is yotzer b'lo pinyan. But the truth is that the chalos of Hekdesh was never chal on it. Omar Rava, so let me go through this idea of Miruach Hekdesh, okay? It's obvious to me, Pshita Li, the Miruach Hekdesh Poter, nobody argues on the fact that the Torah says Beferish. It says Maaser Deganecha. Deganecha means yours. Yours means that it belongs to this regular guy and not a reference to Hekdesh. So it's Dafke de Goncha, even Rabbi Akiva. I feel Rabbi Akiva, the only reason that Rabbi Akiva said in the case of the leftover Omer, that was a special reason, because as we now know, Shalom nitnu ma'ot ela letzorech lehem. Beis Din never wanted to use that money to purchase the rest of it and was relying on Brera. But in general, Miruach Hekdesh Ba'alma certainly would pater. Now, let me take you through some other halachas about this, says Rava. Miruach of an Ovid Kuchavim. Now, suppose an Ovid Kuchavim has Tua, and the same way that Hekdesh could have had Tua, and that would not be called Degancha. Well, the truth is that Ovdei Kochavim, the question whether Degancha is Dafki Yisrael, that's a machlokas, the Tanya. Tormim Mishol Yisrael, Al Shol Yisrael. You can certainly take off, if you brought from two different people and you took Truma from one on the other, there's no din that Degancha means privately owned. It's not as if you buy from Joe and you buy additional tefuah from George that you can't take off from one to the other. Reuven, Shimon, they're all the same. So that's for sure. You can be torn from one Yisrael from another. And you can be torn from one goy on another. And even from one kusi from another kusi. And the truth is, from any of the above on any of the above. because the Degantcha does not exclude any of that. So Michel Kol, I shall call, whatever the heck you're going to do. So says Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, all Chiyuvim are the same. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Omrim, no. Tormim Michel Yisrael, I shall Yisrael. Yes, because both of those are Chiyuvim Midiraisa. And you can take Ovde Kochavim on Kusim, because obviously these Tanoim, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, hold that Kusim have a din of Akum. They don't have a din of Yisrael. And we say that they're Gerei Arayas and not true Gerim. And therefore you could take from Goyim on Kusim or from Kusim on Goyim, but you cannot take from grain that is Chayev, that is Mishal Yisrael, and use it to potter grain that's potter, because remember, then it wouldn't have the din of Meiser. It would end up being Teva. Or vice versa. You can't take off grain that is potter, Midiraisa, to potter the Meiser on something that is Chayim Midiraisa. Therefore, you cannot take Mishal of the Kechavim or Shalkutim al Shal Yisrael. Okay, so therefore, I say, it's clearly a machlokas about whether Miruach Akum potters or not, and that would be the Nafkamina. Now, tomorrow we'll talk about how about a kegdish that makes dough. Is that a ptur from challah? That we'll discuss. I just want to point out to you that this, the last machlokas over here is not truly persuasive, because our Gemara is approaching it as if it's a Dover Pashet, that the question revolves around, the way Rav is explaining it, the Miruach Akum, but there's a whole different issue that it might be referring to. Namely, whether Yesh Kinyan La'akum Lo Tzimi De Maisras. So see, that's a different issue. It has nothing to do with the Miruach. It has to do whether if a Goy purchases land in Eretz Yisrael, it no longer has the Chiyuvim of Trumas HaMaisras. So the truth is, in the Yerushalmi, this is the way the sugya is understood, as a Machlokas Tanoim, about whether Yesh Kinyan La'akum Lafkiya Midei Maisras. Here, I'm not sure why, but over here, Rava understands that the entire issue is in terms of Miruach. Exactly what the level of the Miruach over here is, that the truth is about Machlokas Rishonim, whether it's Miruach, the act of Miruach, or Miruach Dafka on what he owns, but that's not Nogea, the issue of whether he has a Kayach to be Kayna Eretz Yisrael, Lafkiya Midei Maisras, it's a different issue.